Praise be Jesus and Mary. We heard in today's gospel that when Jesus healed the paralytic, some of the scribes harbored evil thoughts, and you know our Lord knew it. So let's not forget that God knows our evil thoughts as well. So today we're going to consider when bad thoughts are sinful. The great danger of bad thoughts, and bad thoughts when entertained, and the remedies against bad thoughts. First of all, there are two ways that people go astray regarding the sinfulness of bad thoughts. Some are scrupulous, and they're afraid that every thought is a sin, and this, of course, is not the case. It's not the bad thought that is sinful. Our minds are always working. We come up with some crazy thoughts out of nowhere. It's the consent to the thoughts that is sinful. All of the malice of mortal sin consists in a bad will. That's why St. Augustine teaches that where there is no consent, there's no sin. And even if the temptation or the rebellion of the flesh should be very violent, there's no sin as long as there's no consent. Now, others have a lax conscience. And they think that evil thoughts, even if they're willfully indulged in, are not mortal sins, unless the act is carried out. Now, this is an error that's worse than the first. What we cannot lawfully do, we cannot lawfully desire. Therefore, bad thoughts to which a person consents has the same malice as the bad act. As sinful works separate us from God, so do sinful thoughts. We read in the Book of Wisdom that perverse thoughts separate us from God. The second point is the great danger of bad thoughts when entertained. In the Book of Proverbs, we learn that it's necessary to constantly guard against all bad thoughts, which are an abomination to God. They're called an abomination to the Lord because, as the Council of Trent teaches, that bad thoughts, particularly thoughts against the 9th and 10th commandments, sometimes inflict on the soul a deeper wound, and they're more dangerous than external acts. Why? Well, first of all, they're more dangerous because sins of thought are more easily committed than sins of action. Secondly, at the hour of death, we may not be able to commit sinful actions, but we could be guilty of sins of thought. And whoever has the habit of consenting to bad thoughts during life will be in danger of entertaining them at death, because the temptations of the devil are more violent at that time. He knows that his time is short, and he makes great efforts to drag souls to hell at that moment. The third point is on the remedies against bad thoughts. The prophet Isaiah says that to be freed from bad thoughts, we must take away the evil of our thoughts. So what does he mean by taking away the evil of our thoughts? He means that we should take away the occasions of evil thoughts, by avoiding dangerous TV shows or video games, websites, and movies. It's also necessary to abstain from immodest dress or keeping bad company and reading books, that are obscene or just otherwise bad. When dating, avoid places that would be occasions of sin. Some young people ask, "Well, Father, is it sinful to make out, or just how far can you go?" That's hard to say. Each person is different. One thing I can say is that people who engage in such activity are often in the proximate occasion of mortal sin. And we know we not just have to avoid sin, we have to avoid occasions of sin. And experience shows that few of them are found without grievous faults. It's useless for them to say that they neither had a bad motive or thought. This is a trick of the devil. In the beginning, he doesn't suggest bad thoughts, but by frequent conversations and close contact, the affections become strong, and the devil blinds them to the danger and sinfulness of their conduct. And before they know it, they've lost their innocence and separated themselves from God. How many young people have been deceived by the devil and caught in that snare, we'll never know. Above all, in order to avoid bad thoughts, men and women must refrain from looking at each other as mere objects. We have to get into the habit of practicing a custody of the eyes. Remember the words of Job. He said, "I made a covenant with my eyes that I should not so much as think upon a virgin." He says he made a covenant with his eyes that he would not think. Now, what have the eyes got to do with thinking? Well, St. Bernard says that through the eyes, the darts of impure love, which kills the soul, enters the mind. Therefore, St. Alphonsus says, it's always dangerous to look at young people, who are elegantly dressed, and to look at them purposefully without a just cause is at least a venial sin. When thoughts against chastity present themselves, it's always necessary to banish them at once. The instant you perceive the thought, reject it. One saint after another will tell us that we can fight any temptation that comes along except temptations against chastity. We have to flee from those. We are no match. But should the temptation continue, mention it to your confessor. St. Philip Neri used to say that a temptation disclosed is half conquered. St. Pachomius one day saw a devil boasting that, he often made a certain monk fall into sin because when tempted, the monk, instead of turning to God, listened to his suggestions and began to reason with the temptation. But the saint heard another devil complaining that he could gain nothing from the monk whom he tempted because the monk immediately had recourse to God for help. He was always victorious. Ask and you shall receive. Our Lord is faithful. Have recourse to Mary most pure. Pray, three Hail Marys, the Memorare, and she will never fail to help you.